Pacifico, Phil Hendrick.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendrick Show, 877-876-7445, and it is our news and information hour here on the world-famous Phil Hendrick Show. With me is Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Bud?
Yeah, pretty interesting first couple hours.
Yeah, that one guy, I thought that guy was going to come out of the airplane.
Well, that guy, Charlie LaFountain, has got serious problems now, and as is the case with many of the people that are on our show. Charlie, by the way, is going to be featured on our podcast, which will be episode 16 tomorrow. Will most likely debut. You'll be able to upload it sometime midday Pacific time. And it will be the original appearance of Mr. LaFountain on this show when he was talking about this nonsense, having his granddaughter not bathe and all of this other ridiculous stuff that it was kooky.
Yeah, but then we found out the guy he was dumping into his underwear.
Yeah. We get a lot of guests on this show that soil themselves, and that was... But to hear that guy talking, and not only the fear of the flying, fear of the aircraft, the extreme panic attacks that he had, and the guy is a veteran of the 8th Air Force.
Yeah, he said the 8th Air Force, and that were all the guys in his squadron.
All the guys in his squadron. Anyway... So that'll be episode 16 of the Free Phil Hendrick podcast, debuting tomorrow. And so it'll be Charlie's original appearance on our program that you may have heard or you might have missed. And if you did, check it out. Ex-smokers gain more weight than thought. By the way, we have in our News and Information Hour, our New York Times front page on our video cast on Phil TV and HD. This particular newspaper we're looking at, and I actually blew up the screen so that Dan could see it because we were using a split screen. And you know what? I got rid of that. It's from this date, July 11th, 1957, and there isn't a whole lot in the news here that I could see that was all that groundbreaking until I got all the way over to this far right-hand column, and this was really almost, it's kind of amusing. And remember, this is the old days of communist Russia. This is 1957, and the news is Malenkov to run electric station in Central Asia.
What's that?
An electric station is the hydroelectric plant.
Oh, for the people that have electricity.
Yeah, what'd you think it was?
It sounded like it's like a train set or something.
A train set? What does that mean?
Well, it sounded like he was going to be running an electric station for a train set.
No, man, what is it with you guys? Are you kidding? But here's the thing that I thought was very interesting about this story. This is 1957. This was on the heels of the ousting in Soviet Russia of a sort of committee of leaders after Stalin died, which was a terribly turbulent period in the history of the Soviet Union, now for the most part Russia. But after Stalin died and the end of that really terrible period, that guy, Stalin was a murdering dictator. And the guy that ran the KGB back then, wow.
Who's he?
He was some guy by the name of Beria, B-E-R-I-A. And he was just you talk about I can't even describe it. The guy was an iron-fisted, totalitarian, police state guy. And all kinds of cats went into that Lubyanka prison, which was the prison they had in Moscow, and you never saw him again, man. I mean, that was it. You went into that prison, bye, see you later.
What'd they do?
Well, what do you think they did?
Three guesses, and the first two don't count.
You mean they killed him?
Yeah, they killed him.
Why?
Just get rid of him. Just get rid of him, man.
What about, like, they have a lawyer?
A lawyer? Yeah, they had a lawyer. They had a lawyer. The kind of lawyer you got in that kind of a system. Guy would just stand there in front of the judge and go, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, no, sir.
So they didn't have no lawyer.
No, man. It's totalitarianisms.
Say that again?
What is that?
Well, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Totalitarian. Anyway, so what happened was is this. Stalin croaks, and there are many to this day who believe he was poisoned. I think we get a little, crazy with this stuff. He'd had a series of strokes. He dies. Now comes a power vacuum, if you will. And the first guy that tried to step into it was that Beria guy. But when Stalin died, Beria didn't have a protector. He no longer had the guy that shielded him. And that was the end of that guy. And
what did he do to him?
I think he got executed. I mean, I think they took him to the basement. If you went down to the basement there at the Lubyanka prison, it was like, boink, they'd go ahead and just kill you. But point being, that after he died, now came a sort of a committee leadership type of concept. They had three or four guys. And that lasted for a couple of years. And the newspaper that we've got here, July of 57, seems to be a paper that is reporting on the aftershock where those guys were gotten rid of and Khrushchev took over. Nikita Khrushchev was one of the most famous and significant leaders in the history, the short history of the Soviet Union. And I remember his name all through my childhood growing up. When we were in school, I mean, the name Khrushchev, when we were taking current events and all of that stuff, that was a big name. And apparently he'd just been promoted to the overall premiership. And this guy Malenkov, one of the guys that was in this committee that got kicked out of there, was relegated to running an electric station. So it gives you an idea of the, if you will, and I put this in quotes, the egalitarian concept here behind, you know, comrade, we've ousted your ass, and you're out of here, man. Now, that doesn't mean he goes into retirement on a villa in a lake someplace. This cat, he got another job. He got a job in Central Asia, man. Freaking Siberia, for all I know.
Running at some electric station.
Yeah. So you go from being one of the most powerful men in the world, the head of one of the biggest nations in the world, at the head of one of the biggest armed forces in the world, a guy, a player, who's on the front page of every newspaper in the Soviet Union and practically the world, every single day of your life. And now what are you doing? You're throwing switches and filling out forms in Kazakhstan someplace.
Man, I think I'd rather be shot.
Anyway, so that was that. That's today's little paper. That's the front page of the New York Times, July 11th, 1957, man. Woo! All right, here's a story that I can tell you is part bullcrap because I gained 40 pounds. No, it's not bullcrap, but in any event, here is the story. Ex-smokers gain more weight than thought. Really? Here's the average weight gain, 11 pounds. Now, I gained 40.
Well, you ain't average, man.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment. You're right, I'm not average. The average weight gain associated with giving up smoking is much higher than previously thought, experts have found. People can expect to put on 5 kilograms, that would be 11 pounds, within a year of quitting.
What's a kilogram?
That's a unit of measurement that they use in England.
Why?
Because they just use that, man. That's just what they do.
Yeah, they got like, meters?
Oh, that, yeah, I heard about that. A friend of mine went and he's seen a football game in Canada, and they said he's on a 10-meter line.
They don't say meters in Canadian football.
Yeah, he did. He said they did.
Don't they do say meters.
No, they don't. Not in football. No, they don't. They say it like we say it. They say on the 20-yard line.
No, but they got like the 50-kilogram line or something like that.
What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about my friend Snook who went up there.
I don't care if your friend Snook went up there. I'm telling you, I watch Canadian football on TV. They use yard lines.
They do?
Yes.
What I hear about them saying, they say they got a 55-kilometer or something like that?
55-yard line.
What's that about?
They got a 110-yard field, man. And don't ask me what that's about, okay? Because I think I know what it's about, but I'm not sure. It's about the fact that that's what the length of the field was. They say that the football that we have in North America started in Canada. And when it came down to the States, the stadiums were too small, so we shortened the field here to 100 yards.
That sounds like bull.
No, I believe it. I believe it. It's probably one of those stories that hasn't circulated because it's, you know, it relegates America to second spot in the overall history of football, and we couldn't have that now, could we?
Hey, man, why are you being so cynical? You always like support America and everything like that.
I support truth. In any event, I think, but I don't know. That's a 55-yard line. That's because the field's 110 yards.
What's half of 110?
What? Are you out of your... You guys are both staring at me.
Well, I'm sorry.
55!
Oh, yeah.
What's half of 110? The average weight gain associated with giving up smoking is much higher than previously thought, experts have found. People can expect to put on up to 5 kilograms within a year of quitting. 11 pounds, bud, okay?
Oh, okay.
Look, we got to take a break now, man. We got to take a break.
You can't keep going?
No. I want to start this all over fresh when we come out. I'm not going to be rushing this. All right, when we come back, we'll come back to the how fat you get when you get up. You don't get that fat. Well, I did, but not you. When you give up smoking, And we got a story here. Florida A&M's president has resigned in the wake of, only at Florida A&M, a drum major hazing death. You know, that drum, band they have at Florida A&M is big time. That's the Rattlers. And the drum major is probably the most famous of all drum majors. Well, they were hazing their drum majors, and one of them died. So we're going to find out about that when we come back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
He had on a big head on the fur hat, and he's going, do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Well, what's that mean? Doesn't he always got his legs up in the air?
You talk about a drum major.
Yeah.
Yeah, drum majors are the guys with the big, tall fur hat, like you were saying. And they lead the band, man. And,
What's the purpose of them?
Well, they keep... The main purpose of a drum major is to keep the time, because that's why he's,
You're doing a hand motion.
Oh, will you grow up?
Yeah, that's right, man. That's what he's doing, holding a baton.
Yeah, maybe it's shaped like a baton.
Why don't you shut up before I smack you again? Drum majors keep time with the baton. And then they march, and they do that really exaggerated march. Originally, they did the exaggerated march so that the crowd, the audience, the whoever, could see the rhythm of the band, and the band could also see the drum major in front of them and the time that he was keeping for them. It's almost like a moving, he's not really a conductor. He's basically keeping the time. But as time went along, drum majors became very entertaining to watch because of their high kicking and the big hats that were originally intended to be seen by the band and were originally intended to show the basic, you know, time to be kept. They got to be really entertaining guys, you know?
Yeah, the one guy for USC.
Yeah, well, USC's had millions, just like every school. Florida A&M and some other college bands. Florida A&M has got the gold standard college marching band. I mean, they're a very, very flamboyant and entertaining band. And the drum majors, all of the drum majors for the Florida A&M bands are always fun to watch. So, but this story is anything but fun, okay? I don't want anybody to get the idea that we're, ooh, here's a story about drum majors. This is a story about a hazing of drum majors that caused the death of a student. And it just sucks, man. I was just reading about some story, I don't know how long ago. They wrapped some kid in tape, duct tape, from the nose, covered his arms. They had him immobile. And I was thinking about that. I would go insane, man, if somebody had me. I've got a fear of that kind of thing.
Yeah, you were talking about like not being able to move and everything,
like being buried alive, like in pit in the pit in a or the pendulum or however you say it.
Buried alive in pit in the pendulum. Yeah, buried alive. That would scare the hell out of me. Did you ever see that movie, Vanishing Point?
No.
Oh. Oh God. Man, that flick just... And I'm not talking about the American version, which always sucks. Always sucks. American movies are great. But the American version of European movies always suck. There's never, ever, ever, ever a time when they don't.
What about TV?
No comment.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say, though, man.
Shut up. But pretty much the same opinion on television. We make some great movies in the States, and we make some great television shows here. When we take stuff that the Europeans have created and we decide to Americanize it, we always screw it up. We never make it better. Never. We tamp it down. We make it less edgy. We make it less funny. We make it less interesting. We can't resist screwing with something good and turning it into garbage. But that movie, Vanishing Point, oh, that thing was beautiful, man. If you saw the original... European version.
That was made like the Belgian, right?
Yeah, the Belgian monster, the one guy called it.
What do you mean, Belgian monster?
Everybody in Belgium's is fat.
Yeah.
Everybody in Belgium's is fat, huh?
Or what do you call it?
Belgium. What do you mean they're all fat?
Well, that's what everybody in England, they all say the Belgium's is fat. And everybody says the Belgium's is monsters because they're all fat.
Yeah, it's only on account of the donut.
Belgians eat a lot of donuts, huh?
Yeah, that's what they say.
Well, I'm not going to go there, okay? I mean, what are you guys talking about? You don't even know any Belgians, do you?
What, they call Belgium?
What?
Who do you call?
Who do I call what?
No, you call... Do you call me Belgian?
I didn't call you a Belgian. What are you, flipping your lid? I said, what do you guys know about Belgians? And that's what they're called, Belgian.
What, that's the country?
No, the country's Belgium. You know, with you two guys, it's like I'm surprised I don't have to show you how to wipe yourselves and take a crap. Like, we don't have to potty train you.
I ain't that stupid. Why do you think I'm that dumb?
I'm talking to you guys about Belgium, which is a country you guys should have studied in school.
What's it called, Belgium? Oh, I didn't know it's called Belgium. Well, the Belgians.
Yeah, well, you think you're so smart.
Smarter than you guys. I don't even know why I'm arguing with you about it. And what are we talking about Belgium's for?
Yeah, you were talking about the guy with the big hat.
Yeah, the guy with the big hat. Anyway, Florida A&M University's James Ammons resigned as president of the school on Wednesday. I'm out of breath, man. Amid an ongoing scandal involving the school's famed marching band and the hazing death of one of its drum majors. This is horrible news. In a letter to the chairman of the Board of Trustees that was released by the university, Ammons announced he would step down as president on October the 11th. He said he will stay on as a tenured full professor dealing with science, technology, engineering, and math initiatives. I'm indebted to you and the Board of Trustees for allowing me to work in this capacity with you and the FAMU community, Florida A&M. The resignation came on the day that the parents of Robert Champion, who died in the hazing incident, filed their anticipated wrongful death suit against the university. The parents contended the school had failed to do all it could to supervise the Marching 100 band, which had performed at Super Bowls and presidential inaugurations. The family had previously announced that it was going to sue FAMU, Florida's only public, historically black university, after waiting the required 6 months. Champions died November the 19th in Orlando after he was beaten during a hazing ritual by members of the marching band. You know, these institutions that have nothing to do with anything, in other words, we're not talking about the United States Armed Forces here. We're not talking about any government agency. We're not talking about doctors. We're talking about schools. And these schools, whether it's Penn State or it's Florida A&M or wherever, they get a reputation that is huge. It's national. It's glamorous. Let's face it, man. When you got a big picture of one of your football players in Times Square, like University of Oregon did a few years ago.
Yeah, remember that guy when we went there?
Yeah, University of Oregon had this gigantic picture of an Oregon duck, you know, in that green, that dark green and yellow. And these guys, everything becomes big, man. It's more than a school now. It's like a school. It's part school, part movie, you know. It's part school, part nightclub or something. And suddenly you have young people who are not professionals. They're students. But they've been thrust into, we like to use this word thrust, they're thrust into this spotlight that is glamorous, exciting, that gets a lot of magazine covers, a lot of TV time, a lot of, you know, just a whole lot of publicity. And 9 times out of 10, something happens where all of that, you know, all of that potential commercial power goes to the heads of everybody involved. And I'm talking about not just so much the students, but the administration and the teachers, and it filters down to the students where they all of a sudden, man, you're in the Rattler band, you know, so you better just, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's like being on Penn State.
Yeah, it's like being on the Penn State football team. Hey, don't you know who we are? And suddenly there's this entitled thing that's going on. And the next thing you know, somebody's dead. And why is it? Because somebody said that the Florida A&M band is just all this, man. And it's linebacker you know. And aren't we something special? And I mean, I always laugh, man, because I've never been a college sport fan except for maybe the bowl games and football. And I long since gave up watching college basketball. I don't care. Because to me, it's a joke. To me, it's like AAA baseball. It's minor league. It's not professional. It's not the best. When I go to watch a football game, I want to see the best. I don't want to go see who's going to be the national champion because they know how to run a wishbone. And that quarterback couldn't get hired as a water boy in the pros. You know? So, check yourself, you know, like they say.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Don't forget tomorrow, episode 16 of the free Phil Henry podcast debut. I don't know what we just did for the last 15 minutes. Didn't I say I wanted to do this?
Yeah.
What the hell did I get sidetracked on? All right, ex-smokers gain more than... You know what? This story is now boring.
Man, you didn't do a whole thing on it.
I know I was. I don't even know what we did the last 15 minutes. Oh, I know. It was the Florida A&M Rattlers. Nice going, Phil. I completely spaced on the... Well, the only point I wanted to make was this article that is a British study... says that this is a bigger weight gain than previously thought. I gained, excuse me, man, but I'm yawning. And why am I yawning?
You're boring?
Yes, I'm boring. No, I'm yawning because I'm taking a lot of deep breaths for some reason.
Maybe it's all that weight.
Yeah, I think I'm too fat. Too fat. I'm down to 242, thank you very much. And by the way, I got into a shirt. You know, this goes along with the story. I picked up 40 pounds after I quit smoking in the spring of 2010. By the summer of 2010, I was 306 pounds. It was unbelievable. It was disgusting, but it was true. In March of this year, I decided that I would lose weight by the only way, or to paraphrase Malcolm X, by any means necessary. No, by the only way that...
What would that be?
Yeah, well, lose weight any means necessary.
I would just slash and burn all stores that sold cupcakes. No, I decided to lose weight in March of this year. The only way that I knew really how, the only way that I figured was going to work, and that was by limiting myself to 2,000 calories a day. I knew, after all of this horse dung, you know, you can go through all of these dances. You know, well, I do this, and I don't do that. Do I exercise? And what if I eat that? How about if I have ice cream once a week? No, 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 man. If you limit the amount of calories you're taking into your body, then you're limiting the fat that you're going to be putting on your ass. And pretty soon, you're going to be losing that fat off your ass. So I said it's going to be 2,000 calories or bust from here on out, and I even gave myself a little motto, 2,000 to 200, which I've upped it to 210 now.
Well, that means you can give yourself 2,100 calories.
No, it doesn't mean anything of the sort. But I have decided and this is in concert with my doctor. I'm yawning because I'm taking too many deep breaths of air, and I don't know why I'm taking too many deep breaths of air.
Maybe it smells good in here for the first time.
Yeah, it took the garbage out.
Could be. Maybe it's because, yeah, that's it. Bud, you took a bath. So anyway, what I did was 2,000 calories a day. And since March the 19th, I have averaged 13 pounds a month. That's my average, 13 pounds I've lost a month. So March 19th, April, May, June, 3.5 months. I have lost. I started at 289. I was not at 300. I was at 289. I've lost 47 pounds.
Yay!
Well done, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. And I did it just with the 2,000 calories. And I'm still doing the 2,000 calories because next week when I weigh myself, I'll be below 240. I will be in the 230-something range. And then the week after that, it'll be another... probably another month, man. You know, it'll be. I'm giving it to the end of the end of summer, at least to my birthday, which is September the 1st. I think I can be at 210. It's going to be hard, but we'll see.
Yeah, if you're averaging 13 pounds a month.
Well, if I'm averaging 13 pounds a month, so between now and this time next month, I should be below 220 pounds or 230 pounds. I'd be in the 229, something like that. So then it's just 9 pounds between that and my target of 210. But I did it by limiting the calories. And the whole thing got rolling when I gave up smoking cigarettes. I've been smoking cigarettes since I was 14 years of age. And I gave them up when I was 57. So it's 43 years, man.
How many years is that?
What did you just say, man?
Oh.
I just said 43 years. Every day. And by the time I quit smoking, I was doing 3 packs a day. And anybody that watched the video cast back in those days, or before the days that I quit, you could see the cigarettes that I was smoking. And it was very ironic. Before I went into the hospital, it was Christmas week. And just before we went on vacation, I had done the Phil Henry Christmas Carol, the very first Phil Henry Christmas Carol. And it was really a success. We really did a good job. I thought it was funny, and we loaded it up and re-ran it a couple of times. And I was up pretty late doing that, and we did some pre-production on it, and it took a lot of energy. And I don't know. I maybe, you know, maybe I'm just fooling myself, but I think I ran myself down physically at that point, along with the cigarettes. That's when I, boom, I got sick. But that's what got me to quit, man.
You went to the hospital, you had pneumonia.
Yeah, that's what got me to quit, so... But I had no idea, man, I was going to put 40 pounds on.
Well, what are you doing, man? I mean, you're done smoking, you're eating donuts and everything?
In other words, you're not even thinking about it. Okay, I'm giving up cigarettes, and so you're so proud of yourself that you're giving up cigarettes. You don't even, for a minute, think about anything else that you're doing wrong. You're like, oh, I mean, gee, I'm hungry again. Let's go and have another double cheeseburger, man.
Yeah, go down to In-N-Out, man. Four-bar animal.
Now I get a double-double myself.
All right, well, you knock it off. I don't want to start getting hungry and wanting in and out. God, I love that double-double animal style. Anyway,
yeah, I'm going to go get a 4x4.
I used to eat 4x4s. I'll tell you what a fat ass I was. I used to get into a competition with my son on who could eat the... We would go and eat, like, 4x4s for laughs.
What's a 4x4? Tell people what a 4x4, nobody know.
A 4x4, thank you, bud. A 4x4... is 4 patties and 4 slices of cheese.
In one burger?
In one burger at In-N-Out. And it's, oh, God, it's delicious. I mean, they got the best burgers going, man. And then animal style is fried onions on top of that. So we would have this, how many 4x4s can you eat? It was insane. Most of the excess weight was gained during the first 3 months, according to this study. It's based on 62 studies that found former smokers gained an average of 4.67 kilograms. I don't know what the hell that is. If 5 kilograms is 11 pounds, so 4.6, it's about 11 pounds in 12 months after they quit. In the year after you quit, that's the kind of weight that you put on. Now, when I hit that 306 mark, that was in August, and that next fall, I'll never forget it, too. This is why exercise is not enough. I went out and power walked every day that fall. Every single day, I went out and humped it for a good 40 minutes a day. And I was doing, you know, I wasn't running, man, because for me to run at that weight, and I tried running at that weight, you get shin splints, your ankles go, your feet are killing you. I mean, it's insane. So I went out and I power walked at that weight. And I did it for September, October, November, December. I got on the scale in early January thinking, okay, I stayed away from the scale.
You're going to lose a pound, I bet.
Exactly. I hadn't lost 1 pound.
Man, I bet you want to commit suicide.
No, but it was bad. And I said to myself, you know, well, obviously this isn't, you know, this is nuts. So then I spent the next year... 2011, just dancing with this whole idea of calorie intake. Well, how do I do it? I'm not really sure. How many should... Then I finally went and I had a full physical last summer, which is what you got to do, man. You know, don't worry about it. You guys that are like my age or you're worried the doctor's going to find some raging brain tumor, you know, think about it, okay? You're probably about as mentally deficient as you're ever going to get. Now then.
Whatever.
Yeah, but so... For a solid year, I'm sitting there going, well, I'm okay, obviously exercise. Well, how do I don't know. And, you know, and then I had these apps. I was the Lose It app, and here's your calories for today. And I'm like, get out of here with that. I don't want to keep looking at the stupid app. So for a whole year, I'm messing around until finally March of this year, I just went, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. And I would have probably then committed suicide if I hadn't lost any weight. But in the first week, man, I got on the scale, I looked, boom, yeah, finally, man, I was down to like, I dropped 5 pounds that week. And
that means you not want to shoot yourself.
That made me have faith that what I was doing was going to work. And so according to the doctor here, weight gain is important because weight concern is widespread among smokers and could deter some from trying to quit. In an accompanying editorial, Professor Esteve Fernandez of the University of Barcelona and Professor Simon Chapman of the University of Sydney point out that past studies have also shown that many smokers gain more weight than never smokers for a few years, but then the rate of weight gain falls to that seen in people who have never smoked. And they concluded the following. Although obesity is positively associated with an increased risk of all causes of mortality, cohort studies indicate that modest weight gain does not increase the risk of death. Smoking does. Well, we'll just see.
Oh, are you saying they're lying, man, to keep people, get people quit smoking?
Well,
what are you saying? That's potentially groundbreaking, Mr. Henry, to pin you what you're having.
Oh, take it easy. I just think that there's a, you know, there's a real push on to get people to quit smoking. I get it. I don't think they'd be responsible if they said, oh, no, don't worry about it, and the weight gain was actually serious, but how can you say the weight gain is not something that's bad? You know, or not a health issue. But I will tell you this. Give up the cigarettes, man. Give them up and then give up the weight. If you're not ready to give up smoking, don't worry about it. If you're not ready to give it up, then you're not ready to give it up. I'm not telling you to quit, you know. But if you're sick of it, man, I mean, if you're just like sick of it, you know, you just do it. And for me, I you know, getting pneumonia was a blessing because all I got to do is think of myself laying there with an oxygen mask in my face, and I don't ever want to go back there, and that's what keeps me from picking those weeds up, you know. So
maybe out of people get a pneumonia or something.
Yeah, if they get pneumonia, they probably.
What do you mean pneumonia and ammonia? Pneumonia. What do you mean ammonia?
Yeah, everybody knows ammonia is what you like. Your underwear smells like if you don't take a bath.
Will you shut up about that?
What's it called?
Pneumonia.
Why's it got to pee?
You got to pee.
Would you guys shut up? Are you guys asking me to explain the intricacies of the English language? Because I'm not going to do it. Why it has a pee, I'm not going to explain this to you. I got to explain stuff to you guys that I never thought I had to explain to any kid, let alone adults. I got to tell you guys why. What was that question you asked me last week, bud?
About what?
About a choo-choo, a steam whistle.
Well?
He's asking me, how come steam whistles sound like that?
Yeah, ha, 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 ha. So, you ask dumb questions, too, like the one you're asking about how a bicycle works.
Yeah, how does a bicycle work?
Yeah, Robert wanted to know how a bicycle stays up on two wheels.
Ha, ha.
Do you know, bud?
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, not gravity, but anti-gravity, I think.
Anti-gravity ain't no such thing, man.
Yeah, well, I guess not, but Star Trek said that there...
Well, you forget about anti-gravity. You're balancing it. The person that is riding the bike keeps the two wheels aligned and keeps it balanced.
Why don't you just have four wheels?
Because it's easier with two wheels. It's easier to build. It's lighter. It's more mobile. You can pick it up. You can put it on a car. You can do a lot of things with a two-wheeled vehicle that you can't do with a four-wheel. All right, we'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. God, that was tiring explaining that stuff to you guys. We'll be right back. And don't forget, we're online at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. Hit the podcast banner and get tomorrow's podcast. It'll be up sometime tomorrow. Just subscribe, so it'll just be loaded into the old iPod, episode 16. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
What if we weren't right back? What if you lied? Well, then I would have lied. All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night here from the El Pacifico, the beautiful Pacific Ocean. As if you're watching on Phil TV and HD, you can see behind me the roiling surf and the weather today out here, just in case you're interested, you know, the out here at the Pacific edge. We live in a very unusual area of the California coast, and that is because We're out here along the Ventura, kind of the L.A. County Ventura line, where it does tend to get, the water tends to run a little colder, and we do get probably more than our fair share of low clouds on New Year's Day, in fact. Now, last year, New Year's Day was awesome, and we had clear skies, and we had really cool fireworks. Actually, we had pretty cool fireworks this year.
Yeah, there was one fireworks was bitching.
But, I mean, we did have some clouds and stuff on the 4th, but today was really sweet. And there was one summer we had here that just sucked. I mean, I could have blown my brains out, man. Every day of the summer, it was overcast. If you got in a car and you drove a mile inland, man, bang, there's sunshine. Because the stupid fog and low clouds were hugging the coast. But I was remember thinking, what's the point of living at the beach, man, if all you got is this stuff? But so far, the last two summers have been really nice. So I'm hopeful that it remains the same way. All right, what do we want to look at here as we conclude the show's activities? Just going through our news. San Bernardino files for who cares, man, about... I mean, I do care about you guys filing for bankruptcy, San Bernardino, but not that much. Bin Laden's cook has been freed. That's a bummer. I don't want to read about that.
What about his cook?
Bin Laden's cook was freed after 10 years in Guantanamo. Why'd they have his cook in there? I guess it's because he was enabling Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, he was feeding them.
Yeah, that's a war crime.
If ever I heard of one. A man who spent a decade as a prisoner in the U.S. detention facility for militants in Guantanamo Bay returned Wednesday to his native Sudan after completing a shortened sentence for aiding Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Ibrahim Al-Qasi was getting reacquainted with his wife and two daughters and other family members and will spend some time in a government-sponsored reintegration program in the capital of Khartoum before returning to his hometown, said his lawyer, Paul Riker. Al-Qasi, who recently turned 52, had not seen his family since he was captured and sent to the U.S. base in Cuba in early 2002. His release brings the prison population down to 168. Reichler is the attorney's name. I guess you call this probably the best birthday present he ever received. The Pentagon and state-run media in Sudan confirmed Al-Qasi's release. Al-Qasi admitted serving food and providing other services at a militant camp. He was among the first prisoners taken to Guantanamo, the hastily arranged detention center to hold men suspected of ties to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. From a high of nearly 700, the population is now down to less than 170. President Barack Obama vowed to close the prison, but has been prevented from doing so by Congress. Al-Qasi, who moved to Afghanistan in 1996 to work with Islamic militants, struck a deal with U.S. military prosecutors in July of 2010, pleading guilty to providing material support to terrorism and conspiracy in exchange for a 14-year sentence that would be shortened to 2 years from his conviction. It spared him the possibility of a longer sentence. He was never accused of any specific acts of violence. His work as a cook helping gather supplies for the militant... he worked as a cook, rather, and helped gather supplies for the militant camp. His lawyer said he may have accompanied Osama bin Laden as part of an entourage, but was never a member of the terrorist leader's inner circle. Bin Laden, founder of the Al-Qaeda unit, was killed by the U.S.
Man, it didn't sound like the guy did nothing.
Yeah, but he's in Al-Qaeda, man. Doesn't matter if you ain't doing nothing. Even if you were cooking for the army, you're still in the army.
Yeah, but if all you're doing is cooking.
Yeah, but if they catch you, like Al-Qaeda catch you, or I don't know, the Nazis or something, and you're a cook, they're still going to make you prisoner of war.
It's true, bud. You know.
Yeah, but these guys aren't no army. It's a terrorism.
Oh, get out of here. See, that's the thing. These guys sneak under the radar with that whole, oh, well, it's a terrorist unit. Well, guess what, man? These cats, whether they're a terrorist cell or whether they are a terrorist auxiliary police or whether they're the PLO or whatever the hell, this is a militarized group of individuals who have a very definite plan of attack against this country. It's an enemy organization of this country, and I just don't buy this bull crap, man. These people with this whole civil trial. Let me tell you something, man. I don't know if this is another thing that people don't know. If you want to read history, and I talked to this one guy who, you know, I get a real lesson every now and again in how people argue things. This guy's on the phone with me, and he's saying, Nuremberg was not a military tribunal. No, it was. I said, yes, it was. No, it wasn't. I said, yes, it was. No, it was. If I hadn't studied Nuremberg and knew exactly what I was talking about, that guy, with anybody else, probably would have bullied them into thinking, oh, gee, it was a civilian trial. Nuremberg was a military tribunal, and they put civilians on trial as well as members of the German military as well as all this other stuff. But it was a military tribunal. Every single tribunal back then was military and subsequent to that. And we've had military tribunals in Cuba. So, you know, just because you say something creative to get the far-left progressives in your party to vote for you, which is, I believe, what President Obama did. He tried to come up with some real creative stuff. I know, we'll shut down Guantanamo Bay. And here's another thing. We'll have civilian trials. And that gets, like, a lot of progressives who really don't know why they believe what they believe, but they just think that sounds cool. So Obama promised that to them and a whole bunch of other crap. They voted for him. He gets in to be president, and he does what any president does. He goes, thanks a lot. Nice, thanks for your votes, but we're just going to, you know, put you to the rear of the line, man. That's the way the ball game's played!
Yeah, but they thought he's a real prog.
Well, he wasn't a real prog. Anybody that thinks Obama's a real prog, and I got news for you. Healthcare. It may sound really extremely liberal to your rank-and-file conservative. I got news. It ain't all that liberal, man. It's over a 100-year-old idea, for God's sake. World-famous Phil Henry Show. Oh, bye.
Phil
You were
Henry.
Late.
I know.